Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian.
When does democracy have a dark side? We'll speak with Professor Michael Mann. Democracy, the idea of governing of, for, and by the people, is a long exalted principle, particularly here in the U.S. But our next guest suggests that democracy may also have a dark side. He suggests that majorities can and do oppress minorities, often in the name of majoritarian democracy. In the worst case scenarios, this has led to murderous ethnic cleansing and ultimately genocide. We're joined now by Professor Michael Mann. Michael Mann teaches sociology at UCLA and has authored several books, including Sources of Social Power, Fascists, and the subject for today, The Dark Side of Democracy. Welcome, Michael Mann.
Thank you for having me, Maria.
Great to have you. So you open your book with historical figures who had allegedly embodied enlightened reason along the line of Thomas Jefferson, for example. And yet Thomas Jefferson and others justified exterminating entire peoples.
Yes, that's right. In fact, we find that with the settler colonies, we find the most direct relationship between democracy and ethnic cleansing, because the greater the level of democracy among the settlers, the more murderous they were towards the native populations. So North America and Australia are really the most exterminatory regimes as far as native peoples are concerned, wiping out about 97% of the Native Americans of this landmass, and slightly less, 95% in Australia. And where imperial governments were stronger and more authoritarian, as in the Spanish Empire, for example, the death rate was less. So we do find people like Thomas Jefferson, the first governors of California, all urging people to get rid of the Indians, and even with almost all of the Native Americans gone, President Theodore Roosevelt declared that extermination was as ultimately beneficial as it was inevitable. So there is quite a history of this settlers who have pretty well-functioning forms of democracy for themselves being more murderous towards people that they define as aliens.
And the other thing I found quite interesting is that you say this phenomenon of ethnic cleansing and genocide, it's not really primitive or alien, it's a modern problem.
I think that the desire to get rid of a whole people is modern. Certainly we find many atrocities throughout history, but when we look at things like the atrocities committed by the Babylonians against the Jews, documented in the Old Testament, we see something else. We see them marching in, coming across the first Jewish city, demanding surrender, and if they don't surrender, they will all be killed, so say the Babylonians. They don't surrender, the Babylonians storm the city, they kill all the inhabitants. But that's a military tactic. That's supposed to get them, the other cities, to surrender. And of course, the other cities do. And this kind of practice was normal in earlier history, but the notion of wiping out a whole people is, I think, modern. And the basic reason for that is in previous periods, class distinctions were so great that rulers very rarely considered themselves to be part of the same people as the ordinary peasant. And so they didn't have a very ethnic conception of themselves. And elites in different societies thought of themselves as being closer to each other than they thought of being closer to the masses.
I would think that another reason for this would have to do with something else that you wrote about, which is oftentimes these ethnic cleansings occur when the minority, which may be oppressed, does not submit to the majority. But in the past, it seemed like there were more submissive, when it was more class-based, people submitted a little bit more.
Yes, it didn't matter very much to them whether they were being oppressed by the Jewish upper classes or the Babylonians. Today, there is far more of a common identity between the people and the leaders, and so you have ethnic bonding occurring across class. So, in a way, class conflict, class divisions are a protection against ethnic cleansing.
And which one is worse? Interesting.
Well, in terms of mass murder, I think there's no question that ethnic cleansing is generally the worst, though, of course, you do have these very particular things going on in Soviet Russia and in China, where landlords, kulaks, are slaughtered in very large numbers as enemy classes. But that's very rare.
And in Cambodia?
And in Cambodia, too, you're quite right.
Yeah. Right. One other statistic I thought was striking, and I don't know exactly how this really fits in with your whole thesis, is the civilian deaths in wars and conflicts that, say, in World War I, less than 10% of the deaths were civilian. World War II comes around, it was about half. And now the wars in the 90s, it's like 80% civilian deaths.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's right.
Now, how does this relate to the whole democratic argument?
Well, I think that part of it relates, obviously, to new weapons of war, and especially to aerial bombing. But it's certainly the case that we, the democracies, in winning World War II, for example, did engage in indiscriminate bombing. And I'm not thinking primarily of Hiroshima, which you can debate about that. It was supposed to end the war earlier, and it probably did. But I'm thinking more of the firebombing of Tokyo or Dresden, in which the American and British Air Force as well was deliberately targeting civilians in order to destroy the will of the Japanese and German people. Of course, it didn't really work. But there's no question, as far as the British were concerned, there was a strong element of revenge for German bombing of British cities. So democracies, it depends what you count as atrocities. Democracies, if you bring in wars, have been just as atrocious as anyone else.
Now, if we go into your theoretical arguments here, one of the things you distinguish, which I thought was quite interesting, are these two versions of we the people.
Yes.
You have this liberal version that honors the individual, and one that you call organic or whole people that seems to be more about the entire community. Why don't you describe these concepts and give us some examples?
Yes. Well, there are two concepts of the people. There's two Greek origins. Demos, from which we get the democracy words, and ethnos, from which we get ethnicity and ethnic cleansing. And now these are both words for the people, ruled by the people. And the problem comes when the two get confused. If you think of we the people in the United States, we the people actually meant white males. It was also something, it was also a political regime dominated by property owners. And so it didn't actually mean everybody. Whereas in the 19th and 20th century, it became much more likely that people, when talking about we the people, would mean absolutely everybody. And this became bound up with a form of nationalism, whereby everyone who was part of the same ethnic group was considered to have the same culture, the same soul, and that since there was a unitary group, a single ethnic group, the state had to represent that, and minorities could not be full members of this state, and so were discriminated against. As you said earlier, it's when the minorities resist that you get real trouble. The normal lot of minorities is to accept discrimination. Maybe they should if it leads to ethnic civil wars and ethnic cleansing.
You know, it's interesting. I was looking through your examples that you argued were evidence of this. And Rwanda, I would like to focus on Rwanda because I was thinking about the ethnic minority, which was the Tutsi people that were essentially annihilated in the genocide, mm-hmm. were not really resisting the Hutu power that took the government after the president was assassinated. So can you explain that particular genocide in terms of resistance and laying claims to the same land? Obviously, the Hutu power wanted the land.
Yes.
But it seemed like there was something else to it. And the other thing I want you to address, you talk about how sometimes these genocides and ethnic cleansings are really a plan C, that they don't intend to be genocidal. And I was looking for evidence of this in Rwanda and couldn't quite find it. Can you explain?
Yes, that's two questions, yes. The Tutsis were only 15% of the population, but they were considered by the Belgians, Rwanda was part of their empire, were considered by the Belgians as the natural ruling group, the people with more power, with more abilities, and so they ruled through the Tutsis. And this strengthened the senses of ethnic identity. But in the last years of Belgian rule, there were pressures from Belgium and also from within Rwanda to do more for the Hutus. And after independence, the Hutus came to power. And Tutsis then felt disgruntled. Many of them left the country. Now, it isn't actually true, what you said, that there was no resistance, because there were two things that sparked off the genocide. One was the shooting down of the plane of the president, the Hutu president. presumably by Tutsis.
Yeah, I think that's presumably, though. There's some question about that.
We'll never know for sure, but the balance of probability is that it was indeed Tutsis. The second thing that was going on is there was a Tutsi invasion by the people who'd fled, the Tutsis who'd fled into neighboring Uganda, and they'd been helped by the Ugandan government.
Right, the Rwandan Patriotic Front.
That's right.
But these were not the residents of Rwanda. These were people who had been displaced before who had come back.
That's right.
Wanted their land back.
Yes, they wanted to win a war and become the new government, and indeed they did. But it's true that the majority of the Tutsis in Rwanda were not resisting. But the Hutus came to believe that these Tutsis were helping the Tutsi invaders. There was a fierce battle going on within the Hutu community. And as a result of the invasion and then the shooting down of the president's plane, the Hutu extremists managed to come to seize power. And as soon as they seized power, they launched the genocide. Let me say that in these 20th century cases, like Rwanda, Yugoslavia, Armenia, these are not democracies doing it. But it is the problem of the democratization process. All of these groups who eventually perpetrated the genocide or ethnic cleansing in these cases were originally seeking a more democratic form of government. And it was when they began to confuse those two senses of democracy, of rule by the people, with a particular ethnic group that it led towards these terrible atrocities. So I'm not saying in those cases that they were democracies. They obviously weren't, but that it was the democratizing process that led towards.
There's something in the U.S. that kind of shows an oppressive quality of democracy, of majorities oppressing a minority. But it's not ethnic cleansing. It's just a violation of rights. Prop 8 is the example that I frequently look to, this or maybe in Prop 187 or some of these other propositions. And it really seems to be direct democracy that often is the violating of the minorities.
Yes, well, of course, what direct democracy, what referenda can do is whip up scares and against minorities who seem deviant, and you do get that in the propositions. But I think that, the kinds of terrible atrocities that I'm talking about are in a different league.
They're definitely in a different league.
And I think there is a bright side to what's going on. There is a steady progress of rights in this. Well, not completely steady, but the backlash is unlikely to prevail in the medium term, I would think, because it's clear that society is going in a more human rights direction.
Now, is that because of the kind of democracy that is established here in the United States?
Well, I think it's more general than that. I think that there are social processes going on across the Western world as a whole, and so you have the same kind of thing happening in Europe too now. It's not because there are not referenda in that way. It doesn't have the same drama involved as is the case in California, but there is an advance of these kinds of rights, and I'm not a specialist in this area, but it's obvious that there is a kind of sexual revolution going on and has been going on for some time, and that it partly came out of other human rights, civil rights movements, and that'll probably continue.
Michael Mann, I want to thank you so much for being with us. The book is called The Dark Side of Democracy, Explaining Ethnic Cleansing, and I know I took you a little off track there, and I apologize, but it is something that I've thought about in terms of the dangers of democracy at times whenever the general public decides to violate rights of another. And, of course, you're talking about the extreme version. But I would like to say thank you so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you very much, Maria.
Michael Mann is a professor at UCLA and the author of The Dark Side of Democracy.